This podcast was recorded Thursday, October 17th at 10:35 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like maybe a future Supreme Court will rule that campaign contributions are not a form of free speech, or at least they're a special form. Did you see this week's campaign fundraising filings? Billionaires Miriam Adelson, Elon Musk, and Richard Uihlein combined to give $220 million to PACs supporting Donald Trump. Just the three of them in just the past 3 months. It's safe to say they have more free speech than someone who gave $100 to get a yard sign. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who have raised hundreds of millions of dollars but still say they need more. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, J.D. Vance spreads another false rumor. But this one's pretty harmless, and I would argue, kind of distasteful. But first, with every swing state up for grabs and the presidential election looking like it will come down to just thousands of votes out of some 150 million cast, every special interest, every demographic group is crucial to whether Americans will elect Kamala Harris or re-elect Donald Trump. In recent day, African Americans, in particular black men, have drawn a lot of attention. A New York Times Siena College poll last week showed Harris's support among black voters was less than Joe Biden received in 2020. She was underperforming Biden by about 10 percentage points among all black voters and down 15 percentage points among black men. Harris and her surrogates have been working hard to convince skeptical African Americans. Among the surrogates, former President Barack Obama, who spoke in blunt terms at a campaign office in Pittsburgh.
And you're coming up with all kinds of reasons and excuses. I've got a problem with that. Because part of it makes me think, and I'm speaking to men directly, part of it makes me think that, well, you just aren't feeling the idea of having a woman as president. And you're coming up with other alternatives and other reasons for that. The women in our lives have been getting our back time. They've been raising us and working and having our backs. And when we get in trouble and the system's not working for us, they're the ones.
Not surprisingly, some welcomed the remarks, others were offended by them. To discuss this and other issues as we close in on the final fortnight of this campaign, we welcome Sam Gresham to Snollygoster. He is a longtime political observer and activist. He once led the Columbus Urban League, and he now works with Common Cause Ohio. Sam Gresham, it's great to have you on Snollygoster.
Thank you, Mike, for having me on the show. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, let's start with the former president's remarks. What did you make of him?
I really had mixed emotions about the president's remark. I deep down in my heart understand that economic and social cohort needs to be emphasized, but I don't think it needs to be lectured to or put down. I thought his approach got something done that I wanted to get done, which was to highlight the needs for a program directed at African-American males. If you understand the complexity, the social, economic, and demographic aspects of the African-American population, it will never be a vital component to the economy until the question of African-American males are dealt with in a strong family unit, et cetera. So it's important that we talk about it. So because of the salvation of our country, the growth of our country, the ability to problem solve, African-American males are key.
Yeah, when I heard it at first, it reminded me of the time when he was running for president back in 2008 when he said that he was talking about rural Americans clinging to their guns and their religion. It's sort of like it had this sort of lecturing tone to it.
Yeah, I agree. And that was my first reaction. before I sat down and listened to the whole thing. That's the last thing Black men need at this point. What we need more so than anything else is a view to the future and what our role will be in that future.
You know, let's just look at the percentages again. I mean, the poll had 15% of Black men supporting Donald Trump. This was the New York Times poll from last week. Let's start. Why do you think that is? Why do you think 15% say they like Donald Trump?
Because it draws attention to them right now. Mm-hmm. I don't think in the final essence we've ever had a poll that showed that percentage of African Americans supporting Donald Trump. So it's a hot item now. So when somebody asks you the question, sometimes people want to get more out of it than they need to get out of it for themselves. And they also want to play a political game. Mm-hmm. Come on, focus on my group. That's what they want you to do. They want to say that I'm important. Overall, what she has proposed, and I think is okay. And I do believe Black males will do better under Kamala Harris than they did under Barack Obama. And it's for a very simple reason. She strategically has had more involvement with them in the political setting. She understands the game. And I also think at an early stage, and I didn't know who was in the background, somebody put this together and has got her on record of saying what she's going to do for Black men. So therefore, it can be monitored over a long period of time if she realizes what she says she was going to do. So I think it works well, because strategically it works well. In the end, Black men have been moderated, and they're not seen as angry Black men, angry at Black women. And that has dissipated in large part.
During political time, we lump everybody into certain groups. You know, Latinos into a certain group, Christian evangelicals into a certain group, African Americans into a certain group. You've been involved in a lot of campaigns. If somebody were to come to you and say you have 85% support among this group, you'd be pretty pleased, wouldn't you? I mean,
you bet. Yeah. You bet your bibby. But see, that's the extra stress test that Black folk have to go through. Black men and Black women have to be at 90% or better, or something's wrong. And that's not crazy. That's not wrong. That's not wrong. And in the final essence, the number will be high as an economic and demographic cohort over other people. But the point now is it's a political issue that one side could use against the other. Mm-hmm. And the Republicans and their surrogates have been going around saying, she's leaking Black male votes. She's leaking Black male votes. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. It absolutely means nothing.
Do you fear if she were to lose that African-American voters would be blamed?
No, I don't think so. I think African-American voters are traditionally going to do what they have done, if not better, than they did for Barack Obama. The percentages will be higher, will at least hit the benchmarks or be higher this time. And the reason is people need to understand, it's phenomenal to get a Black person in office, but it's a much more phenomenal to see a Black woman giving the attitudes in this country about women, period. And the last time a woman ran for president, the way they treated her and what ended up in the race. See, she's much tougher than Clinton was. And I think people had an opportunity to see that. Every time they look at her, they see a Black woman. Every time I look at her, I see a Black prosecutor who's been through every phase of the legal community, been through every phase of the community's political test in the largest state in the United States. Mm-hmm. So I don't think she is no punk by no means.
Now, when you look at one of the criticisms of Democrats among African-Americans, some African-American leaders, is that, you know, they rely on Black voters come election time, but then when it comes time to actually enact policies that specifically benefit African-American citizens. I'm talking about codifying the erosion to the Voting Rights Act that the Supreme Court did and specific economic programs aimed at minority communities, that those promises have not been fulfilled. What's your take on that? Is that a possible reason why some might, you know, either stay home or look to Donald Trump?
As much as I would hate to say that, but there's a historical basis for that. There's been lots of promises that we're not able to execute. I mean, in the first Biden, we had the John Lewis bill that never saw light beyond the House. And it got through the House because we had a majority. When it got to the Senate, it was never seen before. It's tough for people to understand how legislation and what is the legislative process that a bill has to go through. So sometimes hard for people to understand, given all the legislation that Biden-Harris got through this last legislature, it's a miracle. Mm-hmm. But I knew they were gonna have a difficult time with any civil rights legislation because the Republicans said, that's what they were going to do. They were going to oppose it. And plus, we have two structural things that make it very difficult for us to pass civil rights legislation. First is the Electoral College. Mm-hmm. And most people don't know the Electoral College, which is each state having a specific number of delegates, was set up out of slavery. And that the cloture vote, the 60 votes in the House, was set up to deny civil rights. So we have two major impediments to pass legislation that we would need. To change the Constitution, we got to go through every state in the union. And the Electoral College tells you that's difficult. And the cloture vote, which means we have to have 60 votes to talk about a thing before we even vote on it.
Yeah, to overcome the filibuster, which you know, may be on its way out. There's more and more people saying we need to do away with it, but the party that's out of power never wants to give it up, regardless of which party it is. But it definitely has its roots in the Electoral College from the Constitutional Convention, the way to get Southern states to sign on, and then the filibuster was to keep Southern states folks happy when the Senate rules were made. You know, I hate to use the term close the deal, but what does Kamala Harris need to do, not only with black voters, just in general? She's only been running now for 2 months, 3 months tops, and people are, I think, getting to know her better now. She's got 2-3 weeks left. What does she need to do to close the deal, so to speak, if you're a voter on the fence?
Well, there's not too much more that she has not done to close the deal. She's played it at the opening statement. This is who I am. I want to introduce myself. In the middle portion, she said, this is what I'm running on. And then in the final portion, she's reached out to every subgroup that she could find where she thought she had a weakness and tried to sort that out. So fundamentally, she's done what needs to be done in the three segments of a campaign. I think the thing that she's up against the most is being a black female. Now, most people have not wanted to discuss that issue, but it's a real issue. It's a real issue of being a female from the standpoint of this country's perception of being a female in a power position. The second part of that is being a black female in particular. So it has its own advantages and disadvantages. I think her biggest plus was that it was a compressed period of time. Had they had 24 months to go after her, I think it would have been a much more difficult campaign. But given this compressed time frame, I think she's gotten a lot of things done and has a perception of momentum that's overwhelming in a short time period.
Yeah, a lot of it was just, I think, relief on the part of Democrats and independents that they didn't have to choose between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. I think that certainly led to her quick ramp up and quick enthusiasm, and now she's just trying to hang on. Sam, while we have you here, you are with Common Cause, which is one of the leading groups supporting Issue 1, the redistricting reform amendment that voters are voting on right now and will decide by Election Day. It would create a 15-member independent commission, non-elected commission, to draw the state's legislative and congressional boundaries. Polls have looked good for your side, the way we've seen, but it's still an issue campaign. It can be tricky. What's your level of optimism or pessimism as we head towards Election Day?
I'm highly optimistic. This has been a 20-year sojourn for me to get to this point. If you go back in 2005, Reform Ohio Now, Ron, was the beginning of this process of structurally trying to do some things and put some money together. So we've dealt with the rules and the skeleton, and now we need the structure to execute. I think what I learned is what we believed in the first place. If you educate the community about redistricting and the benefits of it, and you have a reasonable amount of money, it's highly likely that you will win, because it makes more sense if you think about how districts have been drawn. And I'm going to tell you, the Republican Carter Party gave us more fodder that we needed for a campaign. Every time I hear one of those commercials and said, seven times the Supreme Court said that their maps were unconstitutional. You know, to go through that process was painful and agonizing. But when you look back on it, how you could use all that information during a campaign was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Are you worried at all about the ballot language? I was talking to one person with your campaign a couple days ago, and they were concerned about the ballot language confusing voters. And when voters are confused, they tend to vote no. The ballot language is kind of loaded, laying out the arguments of your opponents.
I've seen it, and I've read it, and I was confused. But I think the people know. After all these years, and I want you to remember, more than 20 years of education has gone into this process, and they understand that they play the games with it. And we've done a fairly decent job of educating the people. But what the opposition forgot is we had 20 years to educate the community. And it's been a wonderful education, because everybody knows what gerrymandering is. 20 years ago, had you said that, it would have been crickets.
No, I agree with you there. I remember I covered this in Massachusetts back in the early 90s, and they drew some crazy-shaped districts there. The Democrats did all the gerrymandering there to get rid of Congress people they didn't like, and nobody cared. Nobody cared. And it's just now, it's I wouldn't say not everybody cares now, but a lot more care now than they did then. So regardless of how the vote turns out, it's an issue that we're all addressing anyway. So, Sam Gresham of Common Cause Ohio, thanks for joining us on Snollygoster. We appreciate your perspective.
Mike, thank you for having me, and have a good day.
Thanks, Sam. We'll be right back.
The candidates for November are set.
Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day,
we are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the week. And this week, we give it to J.D. Vance, not for finally saying that he thinks that Donald Trump did not lose the 2020 election. He finally set it up in specific terms this week. So he doesn't get it for that. He gets the Snollygoster of the Week award for getting attention and spreading another false rumor. This week, Kroger, the grocery store chain, started advertising an unusual flavor of Grater's ice cream. It was Skyline Chili flavored ice cream, seeming to combine two legendary Cincinnati-based favorites. J.D. Vance, who's from Cincinnati, retweeted a news story about this, saying he and President Trump will stop this. It turns out they won't have to. Grater's advertising agency says the Skyline Chili ice cream flavor was concept art and is not available or in production. Skyline Chili says they are working on a, quote, fun collaboration with Grater's to use its spice blend. Let's hope not. No offense to Skyline Chili fans, but Grater's Black Raspberry and Buckeye Blitz are more than fine with me. But anyway, for spreading another false rumor, granted, it was very harmless, J.D. Vance gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please to be sure to leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast, and just tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster on WOSU Public Media.
Boston has their beans, Georgia collard greens, and New York's got her pizza pie. And Cincinnati's famous for her skyline. Skyline chili's the reason why. Now chili over rice to some is very nice. Over coney dogs or straight up in a bowl.